Chapter 67. Their lovemaking was completely one-sided. Again. Janine had been a virgin only a month ago, so Dorian told himself it was a lack of practice, that her awkwardness was an awkwardness of how. But Janine was coordinated, and Dorian was ravenous, so that justification was getting strained. She averted her gaze as he lay atop her, unable to match the intensity of his eyes. He buried his head in her hair, trying to ignore her body's lack of arousal. He finished alone. He held her, inhaling the scent of her, trying not to feel lonely. She never denied him, even when he came to her a second time in a day, or a third. And that made it worse. She didn't pretend to climax, at least not yet. But even when she did climax, afterwards, the gap still wasn't bridged. In everything she didn't say, he saw a woman trying desperately to love him and give love every chance to grow. Even now, as he held her, she held him. He'd tried everything short of Vere to make her love him as he loved her. He had a kingdom to defend and administer, men to train, plots to unravel, reforms to institute, magic to practice. But every day, he carved out hours simply to spend with her, to talk with her, to listen, to dance, to recite poetry, to tend the garden together, to tell stories, to listen to bards, to laugh, and only to make love. After all that, the hell of it was that it seemed to be working. Janine seemed more comfortable with him, more delighted with his presence and humor, more in love. Everywhere but in the bedchamber. Was that because she was 16 and lovemaking was new? Or was their love as much a lie as Logan's death? Or was everything fine, except that it was poisoned in his own mind? What if she did love him? And he was simply going mad.
"What are you thinking about?"
Janine asked. Dorian propped himself on his elbows and kissed her breast to give himself time to think. "How much I love you" would have been a partial truth. "How much I love you and you don't love me" would be too brutal. But love needed truth to grow. He rubbed his aching head.
"I was thinking of how hard you're trying, and how much I appreciate it."
She burst into tears, and there was truth in how she clung to him. Logan sat in his new throne. He had given the artisans 3 weeks to deliver it, and the men had barely met the deadline. He wanted it simple, sturdy wood with no ornamentation. But Duchess Corinna had prevailed upon him that the Cenarian throne couldn't look like a dinner chair. So he had relented. The throne was sandalwood, almost glowing with a high polish, solid, elegantly shaped, and with a few fat rubies in each wing and in the front of the arms. By some magic, it was comfortable for Logan's enormous frame. He almost pitied the rulers who would succeed him. Sitting in Logan's throne, they would feel like dwarfs. He lifted an eyebrow at Lantano Garawashi, who knelt on a plain woven mat on the floor at Logan's right hand. It looked uncomfortable, but Garawashi appeared at ease. He nodded, and Logan gestured. The Li Nort in Wirtu, their semi-permanent camp that was functionally their capital city, had sent a new emissary. The man had arrived on time, though not an hour early.
"Greetings, Your Majesty,"
the diplomat began. He went on for some time, listing Logan's titles, and then his own, and then those of his master, Overlord Julius Rotans. Logan kept his face impassive. Going to Kalidor without the Li Nort would be suicide. By spring, Logan would have an army of 15,000 if he was lucky.
Garawashi's Sarsier I added 6,000. Between them, they had less than 1,000 horse. Sanaria's nobility were the only people in the realm who had the time and coin to become horsemen, and most of them hadn't bothered. Of those who had, many had been killed in futile resistance to Garath or Sul. Similarly, Lantano Garawashi had attracted mostly peasants, and Hedge saw Sarsier I, and the masterless. His army was the best in Siura, but not the richest by a long shot. Duchess Kirena's spies said the Caladorans had at least 20,000 soldiers and thousands of witches. Garawashi's men were in charge of training all of Logan's forces, and they would train them for at least 3 more months, 4 if the winter was hard, which was an eternity for a peasant army to train. But Logan didn't relish the idea of facing greater numbers and witches on Kalador's own land. However it worked, what they called the armor of unbelief did seem to make the Lee Nought less susceptible to magic, and if they could neutralize the Meisters, that would demoralize the normal Kaladoran soldiers, who were used to their witches crushing the opposition before they even raised their swords. It came down to one brutal fact. If Logan wanted Janine back, he needed the Lee Nought. "After detailed discussion of your proposals," the diplomat said, "the High Command has come to a decision." Logan stood abruptly. "Throw him out," he told his guards. They seized the diplomat by both arms instantly.
"You haven't heard me out!"
the man yelled, as they dragged him backward, his feet barely touching the ground.
"Oh,"
Logan said, scratching his jaw as if that hadn't occurred to him.
"Very well, then. Go ahead, but make it fast, you're boring me."
The truth was, he knew their response as soon as the man said, "proposals," plural.
"We agree with everything in the first and second articles. There are just a few minor details in the third that you may not be aware violate some very important Lee Nought principles of honor. I'm sure quite unintentionally you ask us to blaspheme against our most closely held beliefs."
"Oh," Logan said. "Let him go." "I'm sorry, sir, I didn't mean to offend. What articles in particular were troublesome?"
"As I said, we agree that Kalador is our mutual enemy, and that the time to act is now. We agree that—"
Logan waved his hand petulantly.
"You're boring me."
"We simply had some logistical problems with the distribution of our forces."
"Oh?"
Logan said. He thought they'd have some problems with that. Lord General Aegon had a low opinion of Lee Nought loyalty, so he'd asked for a provision that specified that the Lee Nought forces would split and serve under Sanarian and Siorin commanders. It was a trade-off militarily. The Sanarian commanders wouldn't use the Lancers as efficiently as the Lee Nought commanders could. The Sanarians simply hadn't commanded such forces before, so they didn't know their strengths and weaknesses. On the other hand, it would make treachery much harder to organize, especially with how active Duchess Kirena planned to keep her spies.
"If I may be blunt, Your Majesty, this idea of having Lancers serve under your commanders is suicidal."
"Fair enough," Logan said.
The man was professional enough that he didn't show his surprise at Logan's sudden acquiescence.
"There were also a few other small details, much less substantial, I assure you. But now that we're agreed in principle, I could meet with Your Majesty's officials to arrange—"
"Why would that be necessary?" Logan asked.
The diplomat paused, awkwardly.
"To work out the details of our alliance?" he asked, as if trying not to treat Logan like an idiot.
"Alliance?" Logan asked.
The diplomat opened his mouth, but no words came out.
"No, no, sir," Logan said. "This is no alliance, this is war. You rejected my terms,
This summer, after Garawashi, Sasi, or I are finished looting Weird Two and slaughtering all of your officers, I will propose the same terms again with one small additional detail. Namely, the Lancers will stay under Cenarian command permanently, and if you say no then, I will kill you all, guards.
The men grabbed the little diplomat again.
Your Majesty, wait!
Logan lifted a finger, and the guards stopped.
The only words I need to hear from you are, Your Majesty, we accept your proposal. If you have anything else to say, you can say it to Underlord Dinos Rotans, who accompanied you, oddly, in servant's garb, though he outranks you and is known to have his brother's ear. Tell him he should have had the balls to come see me himself. It's an insult that he thought if things went really wrong he could step in himself. I'm sick of Leenot's sycophants. Tell him he's forbidden to come to my court. I'll give you half an hour. Either come in that door with the words I told you, or find your horses.
Logan nodded, and the guards heaved the diplomat out the door. When the doors closed, Garawashi said,
You seem to enjoy that.
On the contrary, I'm within an inch of vomiting.
Really? Because you just tried to provoke war over a senseless provision?
I knew this kid. Small kid, nothing to look at. Someone picked on him once, and he flew at the guy like he'd lost his mind.
Did the little kid win?
He got destroyed. But no one picked on that little kid again, because he approached every harassment as if his life depended on winning. There were no rules in a fight with him. He didn't care how badly he got hurt. He would win. I was always bigger and stronger than other kids, but I would fight fair and stop when someone conceded victory. I had to fight a lot more than he did.
So you're basing your handling of the Leenot on a metaphor from your childhood?
Garawashi asked.
Which is why I feel sick.
But there was no way around it. Without the Leenot, he couldn't get his wife back. Lantano Garawashi cleared his throat.
While we're on the subject of things that make us sick, I've had word that some members of the High Council are proposing that the Regent send an emissary to see if I am Siora's lost king.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Cenaria had enemies north, east, and inside. The last thing Logan needed was problems from the south.
They will most likely send an army with the emissary.
Garawashi lowered his voice.
He will demand to see Sior Celestos.
And? Logan asked.
Kylar didn't tell you.
Tell me what?
I am sorry you had to put such a man to death, Your Majesty. It is not many men who will guard another's honor when he owes him nothing.
Garawashi cleared his throat, and Logan could swear that the big redhead was flushed.
I no longer hold the Blade of Heaven. Kylar threw it into Ezra's wood. A magus went into the wood after it, and said he'd received a prophecy from the mad mage himself that told him how to make a second sword for me. But the mage has not returned.
But you carry...
A scabbard with a hilt. If I have to show my sword, I'm dead. Should this become known, they won't even allow me to slay myself to expiate the dishonor.
And I'll lose the best part of my army.
I see, Logan said.
We will do what we must to give your mage the time he needs. I'm sure he will return. No man swears idly to Lantano Garawashi. They sat in silence, each tense for his own reasons.
How is your campaign against the Sakage?
Garawashi asked finally.
Impossible to tell. Well, except that I'm still alive, as are all of my advisers. This war may actually help us. It gives us something to offer to men whose only trade has been violence. We call it an earned amnesty. A different number of years of service for different crimes.
How we'll pay for a standing army for the next 5 years, I don't know. But these people have to do something, and I'd rather have them kill my enemies than my people. And you fill your military with the untrustworthy. Yes. But are not many of your own men the masterless? In Siora, are not such said to have no honor? All I can do is give men who want to change the chance to try, and help them feed their families in the meantime. No one who is in the Sakage will be allowed in the city guard, and taking bribes is a hanging offense for guards. We'll have a lot of problems, but for the moment, a lot of people hate Kalidor enough that they'll fight with me to defeat them, before they start fighting against me again. You think you'll win, Garawashi said. As long as Duchess Karenna and Count Drake stay alive, I'd rather be me than the Sakage. Logan shrugged. Garawashi grunted, a sound that could have been assent, or interest, or neither, and they waited silently once more. The massive doors of the throne room opened, and the diplomat came in. It had only been 15 minutes. The man's eyes were filled with hatred.
Your Majesty, he said, biting off every word. We accept your proposal.